History at Hand, revision at your fingertips. Challenges to the Weimar Republic. This podcast looks at the years 1918 through to 1923 and explores how Germany was unable to create a stable democracy in the years following their defeat in the First World War. We will look at why the Kaiser abdicated in November 1918 and how the German Republic was established. We will explore the effects of the Treaty of Versailles on Germany. We'll look at the political weaknesses of the Weimar Constitution, Germany's new government, and how it was challenged from the left wing, in particular the Spartacists, and from the right wing, nationalists such as Wolfgang Kapp, and in 1923, Adolf Hitler. It will also look at the economic problems that Germany had during this period, its inability to recover from the First World War, the reparations, and the occupation of the Ruhr in 1923 leading to hyperinflation will all be looked at in detail. In 1918, the citizens of Germany were suffering intolerably. The soldiers, after their gamble in March 1918 of the Great Spring Offensive, were finally being pushed back. In August, the leader of the Western Front for the German Army, General Ludendorff, said that the war could no longer be won. Food shortages, power cuts, a rising death toll caused by Spanish influenza as well as the war meant that the people in Germany were suffering terribly. With the onset of winter, morale was at a low. When the German fleet at Kiel were asked to put to sea, they mutinied. That is, they started a revolution and refused to follow the orders of their senior officers. This sparked a series of protests throughout the whole of Germany. Workers went out on strike. Army units refused to follow orders too. And by the 9th of November, the Kaiser was left with no option but to abdicate. He had even lost the support of his senior military officers. He abdicated and fled to Holland, leaving a vacuum in which a new government had to be established. That government was established under the leadership of the socialist leader in the German Reichstag, a man called Friedrich Ebert. Ebert declared a new German Republic in place of the old empire and asked for an armistice based on the terms of the 14 points of Woodrow Wilson. On the 11th of November, World War I was over. The Weimar Republic is so called because its constitution, the set of rules by which it was governed, was established in the city of Weimar. Berlin at the time was too dangerous. Germany went from being one of the most undemocratic countries in Europe to being the most democratic country. All men and women over the age of 20 were entitled to vote. The allocation of seats in the Reichstag, Germany's parliaments, was on a strictly proportional representation basis. That meant the percentage of votes directly linked to the percentage of seats that party had. Germany would have a president who'd be elected every 7 years, and their role would be to uphold the constitution and to be in charge of the armed forces and to select the chancellor. The chancellor would run the day-to-day affairs of the country. They would need the support of a majority in the Reichstag if they were to do their job effectively. Germany was established as a federation. That meant that many different parts of Germany had a lot of local power, so areas with a lot of traditional power, like Bavaria and Prussia, could uphold their own domestic issues. State representatives would be sent to the Reichsrat, part of Germany's parliament. In spite of the progressive nature of the Weimar Republic, there were many problems with it too. One was about proportional representation. This led to the creation of weak governments, as it was very, very difficult to actually create a majority from which a chancellor could effectively run the country. Proportional representation also allowed extremist minority parties, like the communists or the Nazis, to actually be able to gain political influence in spite of their small numbers and support. Presidential powers could also be used and abused. Under the Constitution, Article 48 stated that in the state of an emergency, the President could actually rule by decree. That meant ruling without the authority of the Houses of Parliament, the Reichstag and the Reichsrat. This Article 48 was decisively used by Hindenburg as democracy started to fail in the early 1930s. Germany believed that they had not lost the war, and they asked for an armistice based upon peace with honour and peace without victory. The 14 points of Woodrow Wilson were supposed to be able to represent everybody's interests. Many in Germany believed that they hadn't lost the war. Some in the German army in particular felt that the civilians had stabbed the army in the back. They believed that Germany's humiliation was the result of weak-minded politicians and not the military which had served Germany so proud, or so they believed. The treaty came as a shock when it arrived. It was much harsher than the German people and the politicians had envisaged. Germans were angry that it was a dictated peace, that they weren't allowed to negotiate their own terms. They were angry at the fact that they were the ones who were seen to be responsible. The War Guilt Clause, number 231, said that they were responsible. They didn't believe they were. They were angry at having to pay reparations. They believed that that was unfair, especially considering the state of the German economy following the war. They were angry at the loss of territory, about 10% of Germany's land in Europe and all her colonies overseas. They were angry that German people were now forced to live outside of Germany. That didn't seem a fair interpretation of self-determination as believed by Woodrow Wilson. Nationalists were also particularly angry about the restrictions placed on the German military. Once a source of great pride, it was now to be smaller than the army of Belgium. Many Germans took to the street in protest. The army, though, wasn't strong enough to mount any sort of challenge. Germany was still under blockade. If they refused to sign, then Germany would continue to starve. So on the 28th of June, 1919, the treaty was signed. But for the people of Germany, it was Weimar Republic's first great betrayal of the German nation. Germany was inexperienced in democratic politics, and there were many teething problems for the Weimar Republic. In particular, those on the left wing, communists like the Spartacists, wanted to overthrow the government and set up a country run by workers' and soldiers' councils, following the path which the Russians had taken in their revolution of 1917. The Spartacists, led by Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht, decided to take over the government in January 1919. Their bid to seize power came on the back of a strike which forced the government out of Berlin. A revolutionary committee took control and claimed itself to be the rightful government of the German people. Friedrich Ebert in Weimar was in danger of losing the capital and then the whole of Germany. He was forced into making a deal with right-wing elements from the army. Disbanded army units, known as Freikorps, were established, and these had no liking for communism. These Freikorps were successfully able to put down the strikers and the Revolutionary Committee. Luxemburg and Liebknecht were both shot. Here the German Republic had survived its first big challenge, but it came at an important price. The communists felt deeply betrayed by the Social Democrats of Friedrich Ebert, and in the future would refuse to support them. When it came to the 1930s, this was a critical mistake which led to the rise of Adolf Hitler. The communist threat didn't end with the death of Luxemburg and Liebknecht. Indeed, more strikes in Berlin took place in March 1919, and in Bavaria, a Soviet republic was established in April. Again, it was the Freikorps who came and saved the government. The Bavarian Soviet Republic was crushed, its leaders executed. As we have already said, the Freikorps were no natural allies of the new, democratic Germany. They would much rather have the Kaiser back and for the army again to be strong. That was impossible, following the Treaty of Versailles. But many on the right wing still believed that they could restore some of Germany's pride. And in early 1920, an uprising was started in Berlin by one of the leaders of the Freikorps, a man by the name of Wolfgang Kapp. The Kapp Putsch, as the uprising was called, was supported by factions in the army and the police in Berlin. Ebert and his government were again forced to flee the capital, this time to Dresden. The government couldn't rely on the Freikorps this time to put this rebellion down. This time they turned to the left wing, the workers. They organized a general strike. This made the Kapp Putsch fail, as the people were no longer willing to support it. Kapp himself fled to Sweden. Ebert was safely able to return again to Berlin. The German economy found it very difficult to recover from the effects of the First World War. The dislocation that the war had caused for the economy was made worse by the demand that the French, the Belgians, and the British had for reparations. Many Germans resented having to give away money which they believed belonged to them, especially at a time when they were suffering and people were starving, unemployment was high, and the economy was not recovering at any sort of level. The reparations figure of £6.6 billion was finally set in 1921, and the Germans were able to make their first payment. But by the end of 1922, due to those economic problems in Germany, they were unable to make the payment. They defaulted on their commitment. As a result of this, armies from Belgium and France marched into the Ruhr, Germany's industrial heartland, on the 9th of January 1923. Those 60,000 troops were sent to recover reparations in kind, in coal, in iron, or whatever they could lay their hands on. If the Germans were unwilling to pay, then they'd be forced into paying. The Germans could not resist this occupation militarily. After all, they hardly had any military. So, they called in a policy called passive resistance. This meant that the workers refused to cooperate and collaborate with the Belgians and the French. Instead, they went on strike and refused to allow any raw materials or any industrial products to leave the country. The occupiers were forced to remove workers, 150,000 of them from the Ruhr, and in riots and protests, many were shot. Industrial production in Germany ground to a halt as a result of this. Evert's government faced serious problems. They supported what the strikers were doing in the Ruhr, but how could they support them? The way they did this was by printing money. By printing money, this led to inflation, and inflation in Germany in 1923 spiraled out of control. This is what is called hyperinflation. Many Germans suffered as a result of this. Those on fixed incomes, like pensioners, found that what used to be a quite tidy sum of money was now worthless. When people got paid, they would have to spend their money straight away, because even if they left it till the afternoon, that money would also be unable to afford everything that it could afford that morning. Millions of Germans suffered, particularly those who'd put some money away in savings. They now found that that was worthless. This was a sense that many felt of betrayal. The Weimar Republic had again let down the people of Germany. The middle classes, as well as the working classes, suffered as a result of this. Some, though, were actually able to gain from hyperinflation. Those who had high debts found that now the debts were to become worthless, and they could write them off very quickly. But for most people, it was again a sense that the Weimar Republic had betrayed them. This increased support for non-democratic parties such as the Nazis. On the 8th of November 1923, Adolf Hitler tried to take advantage of the chaos and misery caused by the Ruhr occupation and by hyperinflation. He launched the Munich Putsch. This was a failure, as we will later see in a different podcast, but it showed how unstable Germany was as a result of the crises of 1923. It was only under Gustav Stresemann and the decision to call off passive resistance that Germany could return to any semblance of normality. As we have seen, the Weimar Republic emerged from its first 5 years very battered. It had betrayed the workers. It had betrayed the nationalists. It seemed like the Weimar Republic was being squeezed from both sides. And when the next crisis would come in the late 1920s, it found itself unable to cope with the pressures from the extremists.